You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. This is the story of devoted friendship, a commitment to the future, an endeavor which has transcended time, a daughter's devotion to her dad, and a promise kept. The keeper of the promise is beginning his 19th season as a Major League umpire. Here with that story on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball is Phil Cussey. Phil, thanks so much for being with me. We're going to tell the story of you and Robert Luongo, a childhood friend. When did you first meet Robert?
Well, good morning, Ed. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Robert and I were almost like cousins because his mother's sister married my mother's brother. So we grew up at family functions from the time we were kids, just kids. And, back then, everybody had a barbecue, a cookout. And so we were always bouncing around to, somebody's house. And so we kind of grew up together.
And at some point in time, you decided you were going to pursue a career as a professional baseball umpire, and he was going to pursue a career in business and eventually move to Florida.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Robert was a Harvard graduate, and he graduated with, I think it was an anthropology degree, but he went into business. And then shortly after, I would say he worked a few years for the 3M company, and then he just went into, entrepreneurial things, and he was just involved with different, he was going around showing the Goldfinger car that was in the James Bond movie. He had the gun that Ruby shot Oswald with. He was on the Larry King show with that, and so he was just he was just a real smart guy and an entrepreneur.
You get the call to go to the major leagues in 1999, and the first person, of course, you tell is your wife, but Robert's the second guy you tell.
Yeah, Robert was always, actually, my first call to the big leagues was in 1991, but of course, my family was the first, and then, Robert was certainly one of the second people that I called because, we were like brothers, and he was always very supportive, and as I was of his career, and he couldn't have been happier for me because he knew what a long road it was to get there.
And now it's the fruition of a dream for you, and he is vastly successful in business, and then suddenly it all goes wrong. What was your first contact with Robert that physically things were happening to him?
Well, it was the summer of 2000, and I'll never forget it like it was yesterday. I was working with Tim McClellan, and, I was always in touch with Robert. He would be the type of a guy that you'd never know when he was going to show up unannounced. And, the fact that he moved to Florida for spring training, I always saw him. And, of course, when we worked in Tampa, I would see him, but I got a phone call from him one afternoon in 2000. He said, something's going on with me. My hand is just, getting very numb. And I said, well, Rob, why don't you go to the doctor? He said, well, I'm going to just wait and see what happens. And frankly, he didn't have insurance at the time, so I don't think that he was in a hurry. But, as time went on, he said, whatever's going on with me, it's getting worse. Now it's going up my arm. I said, Rob, you have to get checked. And sure enough, he went to the doctor, and they, after a battery of tests, they came back and said, we're sorry to tell you, Robert, but you're diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And Robert's first reaction to that was when he called me, he said, I've just been given a death sentence. And Robert was a big, strapping, all-state linebacker from Belleville, New Jersey, and played football at Harvard. And it took him in 4 years, and it was just a terrible thing to watch. we heard of Lou Gehrig's disease, of course, but we really didn't know anything about it. But to see firsthand this terrible disease, you know, what it did to, you know, to our friend or our guy who was a, you know, a strapping 25-30 pound guy, and to see what it did to him was absolutely devastating.
I can't imagine, as his closest friend, how this affected you emotionally.
Well, you know, you can see it's still to this day, it's hard. It's hard to, to talk about. And, I got involved. I had to get involved. And at the time, his daughter was 9 years old. And, I'm a big tough guy, but I'm a crier also. And I couldn't see his daughter without crying. You know, I just, you know, after Robert died, it was just very, very tough. Very, very tough to see what this disease did to him.
But you were as concerned about his daughter Dominique's welfare as her father was. And you made a pledge to Robert the last time you saw him.
Yeah, the last time I saw Robert alive, I went down to Florida and saw him. And, of course, you know, being in baseball, and as I said, you know, being in Florida for spring training, and, you know, I would see Robert, you know, periodically. And it might be months in between times, but every single time that I saw him, I saw a deterioration. And the last time I saw him, he was just on a, you know, Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, it takes away all muscle movement. And eventually what happens, your lung being a muscle, it just stops functioning and you're unable to breathe. But Robert lost all movement in all of his muscles. The only thing he didn't lose was the movement of his eyes. So Robert was able to talk through his eyes. Really, just by, you know, even though he wouldn't necessarily have a smile on his face, you can tell in his eyes that he was smiling. And, the last thing I said to Robert, you know, knowing Robert, how important education was, and like I said, he was a Harvard graduate. And the last thing I said to him was, Rob, you're never going to have to worry about Dominique education. And I said, I will get our community involved. I said, I'll get the baseball community involved, and we will raise money to be able to send her wherever she wants to go. And from the time she was a little kid, she wanted to follow in her father's footsteps and go to Harvard, and that's what she did.
But even before he passed away, you were involved. You ran a fundraiser months before he died in which you helped to provide for him what was then a state-of-the-art computer to help him communicate with his family and friends like you.
Yeah, it was, as I said, the only movement he had was in his eyes. And believe it or not, there was, and I'm sure it's much better now, it was primitive then, but it was state-of-the-art. And it was, you were able to type on a computer just using the movement of your eyes. And you have to remember that, you know, back then, we're talking about, I don't know, it was maybe 2003, maybe 2004. Computers weren't the way that they are now. So we were just learning how to use computers ourselves. And Robert was in the same situation. So not only did he have to learn how to use a computer, but he had to learn it using typing with his eyes. But anyway, that's what happened. The long story short, I went on a family cruise, and it turned out to be, you know how you hear on the news these disastrous cruise trips? Well, that's what happened with us. And we got stranded on an island, no provisions. It was like a bad movie. And so the cruise company paid for that cruise and offered us another cruise. And my wife and I decided we were not going to take it, but they allowed me to raffle off the cruise as a prize. And that was kind of the beginning, without knowing it at the time, that was the beginning of the Robert Longo ALS Fund, because I sold raffle tickets for this cruise, and I only wanted to raise enough money to buy the computer. I didn't want to have leftover money. I didn't want to have anyone question to say, you sold this many tickets, where's the rest of the money? I just didn't want to get involved in any of that. But the response was so overwhelming from our community, and we raised so much more money. I said, you know what, I have to really become legitimate with this. And I applied for and received a 501c3 tax-exempt charity through the IRS, and that was really the beginning of it. And you know, then Robert died. His anniversary is coming up. He died on St. Patrick's Day in 04. And
he was only 49 years old.
He was 49 years old, yeah. And so, you know, that was in March, 04. And then, so then January, 05, was the first dinner that we had. And it was really just, we had no idea how many people were going to come. It was a local place in my town called Nanina's in the Park, which is a beautiful venue, mostly weddings. And we had no idea what was going to happen. And we wound up having, I think it was like 540 people the first year. And just all people in our community. Everyone was there, knew everybody else. And, you know, because of my position with baseball, I was able to have, you know, great guest speakers like Tommy Lasorda, Joe Torre, Tony La Russa. And so it was really satisfying to me on so many different levels because we were raising money for a good cause. And I was able to bring this to my community to just, you know, I would just sit out and look at the people's faces as Joe Torre was telling stories about the Yankees or Tommy Lasorda telling stories. And like I say, it was just so satisfying. So what started out to be just something to help Robert, and then we decided we were going to help his daughter, Dominique, it grew into so much more because you're not allowed, the IRS with a 501c3 will not allow one person to be the beneficiary of any, you know, any funds. So we had to sit down and just come up with a mission statement and a plan. And really, you know, what we do is threefold. We give scholarships, like we've helped Dominique, but we've also given scholarships to other students, like our high school, local high school, surrounding high schools in our area. And you know, so if their parents or grandparents were victims of ALS, we give scholarships to them to attend a college or a trade school. We also give money every year to research, ALS research, through the National Association in Washington or to other, like Penn State has a big research program for ALS. Harvard also has a research program. So we've donated to them on a regular basis. And then we help, patient care. You know, a lot of coverage, a lot of things are not covered with insurance. If an ALS patient is on, whatever insurance that they may be on, the insurance may only cover 80%. We pick up the 20%. You know, we've just... And again, it's so satisfying to me as well as the community to know that we put a chairlift in somebody's house or put money towards a conversion van so that the family can transport, you know, their family member who has ALS. So it really has grown beyond my comprehension, and it's really become a very satisfying thing for me.
You just finished your 13th annual event.
We did. We just finished the 13th annual event. And, we always have it, it seems, on a Thursday, either the last Thursday in January or the first Thursday in February. And it's all based upon MLB's annual meetings with us in Phoenix and our physicals. And we've been lucky considering that the weather could go any direction in January and February. On Wednesday before the dinner, it was 60 degrees in New Jersey, and at 2 o'clock that morning, it started to snow, and we woke up to 10 inches on Thursday, the day of the event. And the phone was ringing off the hook. Are you going to cancel? I said, we're not canceling. And this year, Bobby Valentine was our mystery guest. And I called him, and I said, Bobby, what are you thinking? And he said, as long as the car can get there, I'll be there. Bob Costas was also, he came for the third time, and he said the same thing. As long as I can get there, I'll get there. And you know what? Given the fact that the weather was so bad, the good news was that most of the people are coming locally, and I think maybe we lost 20 or 30 people due to the weather. So people look forward to it. I look forward to it. It's a lot of work, but it's really become like a reunion in our town, and it's just really I couldn't have asked for it to unfold any better than what it did.
Phil Cuzzi is with us. The dinner has never vacillated since its inception.
No, it's only grown. We're over 600 people right now. And, I mean, when you think about it, when I spoke to my friends who owned the venue, and the first year I went in, I said, how many people could I put in this place? And he said, well, you know, you could probably, you know, don't forget, it's a charity. If you get a couple hundred people, believe me, you're doing good. I said, okay, we're going to do good, but how many people could I put in there? And they said, well, you could probably put 400 people in here. And we have been over 600 consistently. And like I say, the least number we had was probably the first year where I think we had, you know, as I said, we were over 500. Maybe it was 540, something like that. And we just can't fit any people. We can't fit anyone else.
What a pleasant, what a pleasant problem. And meanwhile, when she was 10 years old, Dominique, Robert's daughter, had the aspiration of attending Harvard like her father. She realized that dream, and now she's a senior there.
I am so proud to say that Dominique will be graduating Harvard this spring. And I can't tell you how happy and proud I am of her, you know, and her mother, Deborah, who really, you know, raised her alone since she was nine. And it's unbelievable. To see her, you know, and again, our community has seen her grow, because even though she's in Florida, she came with her mother every year to the dinner. And every year she got up in front of people and thanked people and spoke briefly. And so everyone has watched her grow. And she has grown into such a beautiful young woman, intelligent. And I mean, she has straight A's at Harvard. I didn't even know where Harvard was when I was in high school.
Her father was blessed to know you.
Well, everything, you know, it was a mutual, it was just a wonderful friendship. As I said, it was more than a friendship. It was family. And, really the community is, you know, who comes together every year and makes this thing happen.
But he lives on through you.
And he's looking down, and he's very proud of what he sees in Dominique. And, you know, Robert was always the type that he would look at something, and it could be great, and he would look at it in a way to say, how could we make it even greater? And so I don't know how he would think he could make Dominique greater, because she's done, you know, so wonderfully at Harvard. But I'm sure, knowing Robert, I'm sure he would have some sort of suggestion. But I know he's looking down, smiling.
At the end of the day, you recently survived prostate cancer. And maybe it is because of these great works that you have done on behalf of your dear and close friend that might have played a role in your living on and continuing to promote the legacy of Robert Luongo.
Well, you know, Ed, as I said before, until this happened to Robert, we as a community, we knew nothing about Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And until I got back the results of my PSA last year at our annual physicals, I didn't know anything about prostate cancer either. All I knew is that the doctor said, hey, your PSA has been spiking. I knew that I was getting a PSA test, which is a simple blood test. I knew I was getting that, but I really didn't know what it meant or what, you know, what was a good number, what was a bad number, until the doctor said, hey, your PSA's been spiking, and I'd like you to have it checked. And then sure enough, you know, after following up, I had prostate cancer. So really, you know, I have to, and I just learned through our physical this year that they dropped the age in which your insurance will cover it. I think it was 50, and I think it's now 40. You might know better, but you know, again, after this happened, and I spoke to, you know, different people, and people asked about it, and I had you wouldn't believe how many people said your PSA was high. Well, what's a PSA? I said, I'm guessing if you don't know that, you've never had a PSA test. Again, it's a simple blood test. So, you know, that saved my life because, you know, as you know, it's a very slow-growing cancer, but you have to know that you have it. And so thank God that I was able to find it, and I had the surgery to remove it. No further treatment, and everything is fine.
Everything is fine, so you can continue to promote the legacy of Robert Luongo. What an honor to have you on my show, Phil. So that'll do it for Phil Cuzzi and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.